Okay, we're going to get started. Mike's going to be on shortly, but I'm going to start, and I'm going to actually lead a general discussion, because all of us have worked with volunteers for many years, and we're going to...
Introduce and describe yourself, please.
I will do that. I was just about to do that. So that's what this is going to be, sort of all of our minds together. So I'm George Johnson Coffey, and I'm the manager of the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And I am 5'1 and a half, but I always say 5'2. And I have reddish hair that's blonde and white, and I'm getting older.
Fabulous.
I'm wearing tan glasses. I'm wearing a rust-colored tank top with a long sleeve blouse that is also has splotches of rust and white and turquoise and black pants. And when I described my outfit yesterday, Andrea said I sounded like I was describing a circus tent. So I've been with the Reading Service for 8 years. Prior to that, my husband and I ran a children's music and media company together, and we had a home studio. And then prior to that, and sort of within those same years, I consulted and did training in nonprofit management and volunteer management. And before that, I was actually the manager of volunteer services at the Allen County Public Library. And prior to that, other positions in volunteer services. So volunteer services management is my passion and my career. And so when this position came open, those of you who've been here a while, Lisa Bortner had my position. And I knew her from serving on boards in Fort Wayne. And so she called me and said, hey, I'm leaving. You might want this position. And the volunteer services manager at the library at the time called me the same day and said, this position's open, you might want it. So I melded my volunteer services and my studio work and got the job. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I started in April, and that June, my predecessor had decided to host this conference in Fort Wayne.
That's
so
right.
So I was on the job, didn't know what the hell I was doing. I had done events, so I wasn't that freaked out about the conference, but I came here thinking, I hope these people can help me understand what the hell I'm doing. And they have. Everybody, those of you who are new, you can pick up the phone and call any one of us in this room, and those of us who aren't in this room, and you will get any help and advice you need. It's been particularly empowering for me to be a part of this group, and I'm very thankful for each of you. So, volunteer services management. I'm going to just start with my philosophy of people will come to our services because what they are passionate about matches our purpose and our mission. And what keeps them there is how they're treated. And I think those things are very important. I firmly believe that if you don't have a recognition budget, you need one, because we all know that these volunteers don't come, they don't just pick a paycheck every 2 weeks like we do, so we have to get their paychecks. So I would just like, and this is ironic that I'm leading this, because I'm down 3 live readers, and I've never been down 3 live readers in my entire 8 years. And they've left for good reasons. One is moving to either Portland or Seattle, and she's going to be like a senior editor for Dungeons and Dragons. I mean, it's like a dream. I know, dream job. And then the other, he had to leave because he has to take care of his grandson. And then somebody else moved out of town. And the other person is he doesn't want to get up early anymore. But he's going to still live the weekend. So what are some ways that you have found effective in bringing new volunteers into your organizations? And I'm going to write these down.
Anytime we've had press.
Oh.
I know that sometimes that can't be something that you intentionally do, but I do know anytime we've had press, that just... Yep.
I got you, George.
Okay. So I used to cheat in spelling, and so I never thought I'd be standing in front of people typing the right words on paper. So I'm gonna misspell words. Okay, so excellent press. Whenever we have press, yes.
I have no problem finding volunteers anytime I make any post in any kind of social media. Next door especially seems to be effective for us. And then I ask our volunteers who are already around the state to post in their own neighborhoods too.
Okay.
That we're looking for volunteers.
I didn't think of next door.
This is Anthony. I would say for me, if I'm with friends or friends of volunteers.
So would that be word of mouth?
You could say that, yeah.
I personally believe that that word of mouth is one of the most effective, because the volunteers are talking about what they love, and that's real contagious.
To the word of mouth, we had a volunteer who came to read. She brought her husband, she brought her brother and sister-in-law, and eventually her granddaughter volunteered.
Wow.
So it was like this whole family. The granddaughter struggled with the audition, but eventually she came.
Dan, I'm coming to you.
Oh, good. AIMC and that other nonprofit orgs, we've used Volunteer Match, which is a great way.
Yes. Is everybody familiar? Who's not familiar with Volunteer Match?
If you're not,
everybody
you
knows.
Okay. And then also when we do our resource fairs, which most of them happen during the summertime, our beautiful admin put together a flyer specifically for volunteers. Because when we have people come to the table, they themselves may not qualify for a service, but they love to read. So you have something for both.
Yeah. All right. You know, I have a question about events, because, and I may be wrong about what I'm about to, what I think at this point, because I have always thought, because I have volunteers say, oh, I just talked to my brother, you should call him, he'd love to do it. And my philosophy has always been, if they want to volunteer, they'll call me. Because I've called people before and they've not called me back. Or I've had one of my volunteers, he said, when my wife retires, she'll volunteer, she'd love this. Well, I interviewed her, she came once, and she goes, I don't want to do this anymore. Because she didn't want to do it. Her husband wanted her to do it. So at events, I have people come and they say, oh my God, I would love to volunteer. And so I give them the link or how to do it, and not all of them follow up. So do you follow up on your people, and people, anybody, do you follow up on people who?
Yeah, we have a whole process, and Evan, if you want to talk about that, about vetting and auditions.
And I do that too, but if somebody comes up to you and says, oh, I'd love to volunteer, and you tell them how, and you don't hear from them, would it be better for you to have got that information?
My philosophy is you need to walk away with their business card, not them walk away with yours.
Okay. And you follow, if you don't hear from them in a week, you call and go, hey, you said you were interested.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, this one's going to be a bit more unique. Use Uber all the time, so I've told many Uber drivers about radio reading services in general, and I've actually gotten a few volunteers out of it, and of course family, because family members have friends, and those friends have friends, so even just like my whole family knows about what a radio reading service is now, and they've told their friends, so that, you know, even if they can't volunteer, they can at least get listeners too out of it.
Okay. And I think Amy had her hand up. Didn't you, Amy?
I did, yeah. And I don't need the mic, but we also, Ryan gets lots of Uber drivers that volunteer for us, too.
so they say, hey, what do you do? And this is what I do. And I need to start Ubering. Yes, Amy?
Amy from Voice Corps in Columbus. This might go under, I'm not press or social, We have, again, because of our relationship with the Columbus Dispatch newspaper, we have a display ad. And whenever the Dispatch has a hole, they will drop it in and print it. So, boy, if they ever put it in the Sunday paper, that's when I get phone calls come Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. A lot of folks just want to know, well, what is it? What do I do? What do I need to do? So I talk. And, you know, and then sometimes they call back and some, you know, to do that audition. Sometimes they don't.
So it's an ad in the, your local paper?
It's the local newspaper. It's free. They don't charge us. We never know when it's going to be printed because, again, it's whenever, you know, they fill the rest of their newspaper with all the paid advertising.
Right.
When they have a hole, it could be a 5x3. It could be a little, you know, business card size.
That's a really good
idea. A larger one. We have two ads. One has a picture of a woman who's listening to one of our radios, and the other one is a picture of a lab, a black lab lead dog. And inevitably, I always ask, anybody want to take a guess?
The dog.
It's the dog, yes. Columbus is a dog town. And then we have a brochure, too, that we place in libraries, eye doctor's offices. Volunteers will bring them to their own eye doctor. Churches, a lot of volunteers will bring the Voice Corps brochure to their churches too and pass them out.
You know, one of my staff suggested that we put an ad in the obituary page, and I thought, oh my God, that's so morbid, but that kind of makes sense because a lot of older people who would need our service in general read the obits or to generate that kind of, okay, not the obits. Yes.
We have auditions twice a year, probably, so we don't have rolling auditions for volunteers, so I keep email addresses, and I only take people off as they apply and are accepted or rejected. So those people who have ever signed up as interested get an announcement whenever we have an audition process.
Okay.
So I don't ever drop anyone, so they keep hearing from us unless they unsubscribe or pass or fail the audition.
So it's sort of a come, everybody come now if you're interested.
Yes. I also make it sound really, not really hard, but I make it sound hard and kind of elite. Like,
yeah.
You have a waiting list,
yeah.
You have to pass an audition. Like, this isn't just some run of the mill thing. You got to kind of be special to get in.
Yeah.
And that seems to make it more appealing.
Our volunteers are very special.
They are very special.
Yeah.
This is Bailey at the Recording Library of West Texas. One thing that I created, which kind of appeals to the younger volunteers, is a giant QR code with the thinking emoji, and it says, "Do you like to read?" And that's all it says. And so when you scan the QR code, it goes directly to our website. And literally use stickerapp.com. You can get 200 stickers for like $25, and you can create it yourself. Super easy to deal with. If you have questions about stickers, please reach out to me. But it seems to appeal to the younger population. And sometimes we stick it in places that are allowed, so that's kind of fun. And it's like not too much information, so it's kind of makes people curious. So we're very heavy in our QR codes, because also those with disabilities, they can just scan the code. And then they've got, I've made two. One is for our website, and one is our direct contact. So if you scan it, it automatically adds us as a contact in your phone. So that's really helpful, yeah.
Does anybody else use QR codes? That's a fantastic, you do? That's a fantastic idea.
Question.
I think,
just a quick question.
Oh, yeah.
Does the stickerapp.com site generate the QR code? Or are they two separate things?
It is two separate things. There is a free QR generator website that will allow you to even customize what it looks like, and then you can try it out before you get it printed, of course, and then just import that into a sticker app. It's literally a 10-minute process, and you can have stickers in 2 weeks. It's pretty amazing. But I'd be willing to help anyone who needs QR code information. And then also, our city rotates out nonprofits in the water bills. So we're able to put brochures in the water bill cycles in our local town.
Oh,
And we get a lot of phone calls after that. Are they quality volunteers? Maybe, maybe not. But we do get a lot of feedback from those.
That's great. I think Andrea, and then
hi, Andrea from Sun Sounds. We're part of public radio, so when public radio was doing their tours of all their fancy studios, and they would go by Sun Sounds, and they would talk about Sun Sounds, and people would be all like, ooh, ah, and they'd meet me, and I just tell everyone to go to our website, fill out a volunteer application, because I will never follow up with them if they don't. And once they fill it out, we have volunteer orientations maybe 3 or 4 times a year.
So I only deal with volunteers for audio description, but we send our ambassadors out to the events where we're describing, and lots of people are just like, what is this? Why are you here? Where's the bathroom? But that's actually where we start getting audio description volunteers, but then a lot of those people realize they don't actually want to be describers, and then we push them over to the other side, and Tom gets them on the reading side. So we get a lot of interest at actual description events. And then also I post a lot in the local theater Facebook groups, because those are lots of actors, and there's also that those groups are also posting things like they need ushers, they need, you know, people to work these different jobs or to volunteer for these different things. So I just sneak them right in as if we're theater. So.
One thing about QR codes, make sure you get them from a reputable source or you pay for them, because I've heard horror stories from fundraising workshops and seminars that they just like free QRcode.com and they get hacked, and they get hacked with like really inappropriate things like pornography and things like that. So if you've got donors or yeah, so pay for your QR codes, because that's terrible. So and then one thing, Laura's not here. Just whenever Laura comes in, she just ran the half marathon. She's been talking to a hard tour of like all of our Aerial Lions clubs, and she's gotten a lot of
she's a lion queen.
She's gotten a lot of interest with our local Lions clubs and civic groups as well. And then it's really helped because we've updated our marketing materials, because you know, you don't realize how old your brochure is until you set it next to somebody else's. So,
yeah.
So she's done those things, and we've even at our gala, our annual soiree, we had a really great. We usually do produce a really great video, like a compilation video, and from that video, after we played it, after we had you know, our speakers come and talk about you know, how the services have impacted their life, we had people coming up to us after. That during the event, like I want to volunteer with people and I want to do these things. So, kind of if you've got them in the room, grab them.
Yeah. This is a QR code follow-up, and then read it.
Yeah, that's a very good point on making sure to pay for the QR code, because some of the free websites they'll say, you know, they generate it for you for free, but then it expires like after 60 or 90 days. I want to say Canva is breaching into the QR code thing, but I can share some reputable sources to you guys for QR codes to pay for.
Yeah. I'm going to take the sheets home with me, and I'm going to make it look better than that and correct spelling, and I'll send it to Lori to send out, or get it on the website like we thought we might do. Yes, Rachel.
Rachel from Georgia Radio Reading Service in Atlanta. Tagging off the theater idea, we do partner with a lot of some voiceover studios who have people, you know, who offer classes for voiceovers, so a lot of people who want to get into voice acting and book narrating. So they send their students to us, and that's a great partnership, because these people are very motivated to produce high quality recordings, and it's good practice for them.
You know, I'm going to say within the last year, I have gotten more calls from people who are voiceover actors than in the previous 7 years put together. I don't know what's going on with voiceover stuff. Who has the mic now? Oh, yes, Sharon.
Sherry Cornett, obviously from Eastern Kentucky, and I forgot to describe myself the last time, other than being big and tall. I'm the direct descendant of two Revolutionary War soldiers and the John Ross Half-Blood Cherokees, and my great-great-grandmother's an Iroquois, so I've got dark hair and blue eyes. That's an interesting mix. Obviously, I have the accent. I found a lot of volunteers, maybe not so much out of the community, but like, for instance, Hazard City Schools, they require their students to do some community service. So I got my little giveaway packs made up by a couple of the classes, because they could actually do it during their class time and still get their credit. And I had a captive audience, and that worked out really well for me. Of course, COVID put a little bit of a kibosh on that.
Now, Sharon, I have a question. Are those the community service people readers, or do they do other things?
No. Now, there was one girl that wanted to help read, but then she actually transferred schools to her. They got transferred to another state.
Yeah.
But most of it was, you know, hands-on activities, giving out flyers,
Okay. Making
up little packs I give away. But
yeah,
it helps everyone, you know. It helps them and it helps us.
Yeah, because I typically do not bring community service people in, because it's usually like 15, 20, 25 hours and then they're gone, and it's not worth the training time for us.
We use our community service to answer phones and things like that.
Please use the mic, ma'am.
We use the community service people. We do get them to like answer phones, help with mailing. So like Sharon was saying, like a one-off thing, they need 25 hours, they come in for a couple of weeks. If you need people for that kind of stuff, that's a good source. But yeah, you need to try to better time.
Thank you. Becca?
Becca from Radio Talking Book Service. I'm essentially just like I have been the whole time, but just different colors. So it's green and brown today. I got the same dress in like four colors. It's fantastic with pockets.
Amy's not here. Share the pockets.
One of the things, and I know not all cities or spaces have this, but we have a new organization called Share Omaha, and one of the things that they are really striving to do is connect the community with their nonprofits. And on their website, they really encourage, like, we post our volunteer opportunities on there, so it's a bit like a volunteer match, but they also then have the opportunity for organizations to build wish lists and link them to the site so that folks can directly buy things on, and of course there's a donation option. But we've gotten a fair amount from Share, and the nice thing about that is you can constantly go in and change what your needs are and your availability and that sort of thing. So
that's really good. I haven't thought of that one. The other thing too, volunteer match, I'm gonna put sort of under this. How many people's cities have like a volunteer connection or a volunteer center that people can just sign up in the community? That's another one that I at this point, and those of you who are with larger organizations will understand my pain, although I love my marketing people, I am really limited in what I can do on my own. I have to go through marketing to do anything social media wise, or even what Becca just said, I'd have to get permission to do that. So I'm glad you people who are free be happy. So, but I am going to put volunteer centers here too. And actually, I have to say, especially since this is getting recorded, we have new leadership and at the library, and people are going to be much more open and empowering, because I'm actually reporting to a new position, which is the Director of Community Partnerships and Programs. So she's really going to be into me doing that. So, and I don't think I'll be stifled. So that's good. Okay, enough of my woes. Anybody else?
Georgiana, I have a question for the group. And good morning, everyone. I'm Joe. I'm with IRIS on their board, so I'm a late arriver to this. But and I'm still new to the board, so I'm learning a lot, and I'm anxious and excited to be here. But my question follows up with a couple of the suggestions that were made as far as students and the community service hours that they need to acquire, that sort of thing. And I'm wondering if anyone has worked with colleges specifically, universities specifically, with their journalism programs or performing arts programs, if you've recruited students through those, or if that's, I know it's kind of a temporary thing because there is that transition where they're turning over, but you know, there might be kind of a pipeline of students who work with us. I was curious if anyone's done that successfully.
Or even like an internship for a few years or something.
Yes.
That's longer than a few hours.
We had, it was actually initiated by one of our board members who was an adjunct professor at a local university. And so it was a sports communications class. But she chose us as a nonprofit for them to help with our marketing for our programs. So the whole semester, their entire class project was Mind's Eye. And so they split up all the groups, or split up the class into groups. So one group had audio description, one had broadcast, and one had b-ball, and they came up with marketing plans for each program. So that was pretty great. And that was, you know, again, for a board member, but, you know, even thinking outside of, you know, journalism or theater, you know, other classes could be relevant to your organization.
That reminds me, Purdue, it used to be Indiana, Purdue, Fort Wayne, but now it's Purdue, Fort Wayne. A few years ago, and she's happy with her time, and it was better than she thought, right?
Yeah.
Good. Congratulations. I could never do that. Even when I was 18, I don't think I could do that. But Purdue Fort Wayne has a computer science department, obviously, it's Purdue. And they have like a senior capstone project. And a couple years ago, these wonderful guys helped me develop an online application for radios. And then they linked that up with a database that I can track all of the radios and with what listener had that. Which was great because before that it was like four different spreadsheets. We tracked all the stuff on, it was nuts. So that was
a spreadsheet to track the spreadsheet.
Oh my gosh, it was awful. And it just kept getting, you know, every time the library did an upgrade, and I think the original of Excel was probably from 2004 or something, and I kept thinking, oh, this thing's just gonna crash. But that was if you guys have Capstone, and that's apparently a countrywide university thing, that might be able to do really specialized projects for you.
Yeah, this is Lori from Audio Reader. We're on the campus of the University of Kansas, so we get random students just wandering through, and they can be great and they can be horrible, just like everybody else. But if the students come to you, they're usually more reliable than ones that are like told about it in class or encouraged by the professor to participate. But we've done several marketing, journalism, capstones. The brochure that we currently use and that we've used since like 2018 was actually designed by one of the marketing classes.
Okay. Gavin Bruce, this is Allison from Audio Reader. Gavin Bruce was a student who worked at the front desk as an hourly employee, and he has been volunteering now for over 25 years and was one of our first remote readers during the pandemic.
He actually started as a volunteer.
He started as a volunteer as a student, then we hired him because he was a student and we can hire students to do board up and that sort of thing. And yes, and his mother, he moved away, his mother lives in Topeka, and every year he would come home for Christmas to visit his mom, and he would come volunteer for the week that he was in Kansas, and now he's our remote volunteer. So yeah, he's an example of the long-term student thing. So yeah, the students, you know, hit and miss. But.
Okay. And Tom's been waiting patiently, sorry Tom.
No apologies necessary. We used a small student group to begin the process of developing our app when we started. And you know, a lot of times your mileage may vary with that, because once students are done with their project, they're done with their project, and it may not be fully fleshed out, which was a lot of the reason we had, you know, timeline issues getting our app out and about. But we had a group from Wash U in St. Louis that came in, and they started as eight, and they've whittled down to two people that really were still into it. And it took them the better part of the summer and fall to kind of finish things up. And then when they were finished up and done, graduated and moved on, it was kind of to the point where we could take the app to an actual person that could develop it further. And then from there, we were able to get everything done and launched. But again, like I said, with students like we've all encountered, your mileage may vary with some of them. I've had good luck with high schoolers.
Oh, good.
I have
I have high schoolers that come in and immediately start reading and they sound good. A lot of the times, if you can get to the kids that are involved in like student government, anybody who's doing National Honor Society or ours, Model UN, people that are interested in getting up in front of people and talking. I have one student who is now, she started when I was starting at Mind's Eye, so that would have been 2011 when she started, and she still volunteers for us every weekend. And it's, and she moved to Paris for a minute and London and was reading New York Times for us on Sundays there. And then came
home.
So
how old was she when she
started? She was a senior in high school when she started. She went, she ended up at Penn State and then went overseas and then came back, and now she works at the St. Louis Art Museum and still continues to volunteer for us, and Jamie's been amazing. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, Laura.
Okay, thank you. Mike, I'm gonna hand you my mic.
I do, as you say, your mileage may vary with students, but it's going to vary with grandma too, so hey. There are several colleges and universities in my area, and I've had really good luck with some of them, some students from all of them, and I had really, when I first got there, there was one lady that came in to brought a bunch of students, and she thought we were reading them to 4 and 5 year olds, and I had a heck of a time convincing her we don't read Peter Rabbit. But outside of that, for the most part, they've been very good. I consider it a great compliment. In fact, I just got a call last week saying from a guy that was one of the students from one of the colleges that has moved to Florida, and he's going to be back up here this summer being Mississippi, and he wants to come in and read some for us while he's here. And so I thought we'd touch base with him when he comes to town, and you know, we'll take it from there. So the students can work really good. I try to find out from them ahead of time, or when they contact me, if this is something that's required for a class. I try to get the teacher's name, and then either if the teacher doesn't contact me or the professor, I contact that professor and say, okay, exactly what is it that you are expecting? What are you telling the students that they need to do? And is there anything that I need to do that says yes? Student A did come in and complete a certain number of hours, and then I say, but be careful when you mention that because I'm not a rubber stamp.
Yeah.
So and you know that they, you know, and usually they say, you know, they tell me how many hours they want, and I tell them how many hours I'm likely to be able to give them, and everybody, you know, we work with that. I have one student who came to us in about 1990 when she was 18. She now lives in another state, but every time she comes home, she calls me and visits, or you know, comes in to visit or sometimes to read. She also sent her mother to read for us. She read for us until she became unable to get in and out of the building anymore. So it can work really well.
Yeah, and that is, I think, that word of mouth thing we kind of mentioned, but it's always wonderful when relatives of volunteers become volunteers. And when you mentioned storytellers, oh my God, my most troubling experiences is when I'm sitting across from somebody interviewing them, and they go, and I said, why do you want to volunteer? I'm like, I'm a storyteller, and I love reading to children. And I think, oh my God, because they can't tone it down. They just can't. Oh, they just can't, God love them. Anyway, any more, because we're going to shift gears here. Okay, so we've talked about getting volunteers. How about keeping them? Which I think this is all like appreciation. So things that we do to ensure that they have a positive experience and they keep coming. Yes, Anthony.
Once in a while, our volunteer manager will send just emails thanking everybody for their service. alongside of that, we also have an annual recognition event. We also do a lot for Volunteer Week.
All right, our volunteer luncheon is on June 17th. Have I been able to do it with my couple years? Yes.
I'm gonna steal what my Edie mentioned earlier. Candy, Oreos, snacks.
Candy.
Coffee, food.
Yeah.
Yeah, coffee this morning.
And I tell you, the more you put out, the more they eat.
That's bad.
And we started doing a volunteer of the month, and especially like we always had candy and things, and with everybody being remote, trying to figure out how to appreciate folks. And so we had also implemented a system for ranking recordings, so that if we had folks that were, you know, their recording quality was a 3 or 4 or 5, you know, that were doing things to work with them to be able to improve that. And so the folks that are consistently, you know, at a 9 or, don't have too many 10s, but, you know, 8s, 9s, then we look at those, and some of them have been reading it for us for a long time, so we'll have a vote on who's the volunteer of the month, and they get a certificate, and we send them emails, and then there's postings, they're on our website, they go out on social media, you know, this person's our volunteer of the month, this is what they read. And the newsletter, you know, so there's the, you know, in our annual report, the first one we have a whole section on volunteers. So we try to, you know, put things out about our volunteers and things we send out. And then we've done a couple of virtual volunteer appreciation events, and the first one was pretty successful. The one that this last year wasn't so well attended, so we're trying to figure out.
What were a couple of your virtual events?
So we did 2 volunteer appreciation events where we would have normally done an in-person, like brunch or lunch. So we did that virtually the last 2 years, and you know, people get recognized 5-year, 10-year, you know, 25, and then we had like our 20 and 25-year people actually do little videos, so that we had those to be able to show.
Was that a Zoom thing?
It was a Zoom thing, yeah, kind of a Zoom thing. And like I said, the first one was pretty well attended, the second one not so much, but what we're looking at now is we have so many people, we have people outside of the country reading for us, so they can't come to an in-person event, or people in other states, and we've always had that to some extent since we've had remote reading, because we had that before the pandemic, but I'm trying to figure out, well, how do we please, and we're considering maybe some small in-person things for the summer, how do we please the people that are really like, yeah, I don't do that, I'm sick of the virtual things, I'm not doing that. When can I come in? Because we don't have anybody in. When can we do stuff in person? Trying to please those people, maybe have some small in-person events for local folks, but still we need a way to appreciate the people that are in London or, you know, somewhere far away.
I will say, personally, we do give them a shout out on live broadcast, and we usually play a little bit of a snippet of their, well, we're going to start doing this more often too, we're going to play a little snippet of like their audio of the program that they read, just as kind of like a little PSA.
One of the things that we did along those lines is, because now that we're on HD, we have FCC regulations, we have to do with station identification. So we had all of our volunteers say, hi, I'm Mary and I read Time Magazine on Mondays at 3:00. You're listening to, and then blah, blah, blah. And they really loved that, and just sort of engaging them on that higher level. And we also do, once a year, we do radio plays. Because a lot of our volunteers have acting, I mean, they've done theater in the past. So we do an audio play every year, and they just love it. And again, that's just getting them engaged and involved in that higher level, whether it's just more than coming in and reading.
Hi, this is Yvonne from Virginia Voice,
I just wanted to say that we are having an event this coming Wednesday, which is why I'm constantly on my phone. Anyway, we are doing what is sort of generically called cross-pollination. We wanted to gather everyone again. People were asking, and we wanted to gather with donors, and we wanted to gather with volunteers. So we're gathering with volunteers and donors in one event. Now, that really works for us, because a lot of our volunteers are some of our major donors.
Yeah.
And a lot of our donors are volunteers, well, of course. And then we also invited some of our listeners, and some of our listeners are actually volunteers, but also donors. So we're kind of bringing everyone together, and I think that the inspiration was just that we haven't done anything for so long, and now that we're doing it, we're thinking, okay, if this is really positive, we're going to do it again. We are doing it at an outdoor facility, and the facility is a winery with a pavilion. The pavilion rental is usually $2,500 an hour. It's being donated. Mm-hmm. They're donating wine. My husband and I own a restaurant. My husband got voluntold. We're donating food. And we have a good friend who's a professional DJ, and he's donating his time to provide music. So it's costing us like the Dollar Tree gizmos on the table and napkins and plates. But, you know, it's just because we wanted to get everyone together, we decided to combine them. And I'll be able to tell you later how it went. But I'm excited about it.
That's really good to have all those folks all together. One of the things, this is a small thing, but I have a whiteboard where the volunteers sign in, and I have a quote, a different quote every month from a listener, so that volunteers can see the impact of what they do. And they'll stand and go, oh, that's just so good to hear that. Because, you know, sometimes they're speaking in a mic and they don't know who's on the other end unless we say there are people and here's what they're saying.
Real quick, I just think the first thing a volunteer should hear when they walk in the door is a nice hearty hello and welcome. And
yes.
Super cheesy and, you know, hey, how you doing? You know, just make sure they feel like they're welcome.
Yeah.
And then the last thing they should hear before they leave the room or leave the building is thank you. Have a great week.
Yes.
You know, it's so ingrained into my brain that there are times where my fellow employees will come into my office and say something, and then as they're leaving, I'll say, thanks, have a great week. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're still going to be here tomorrow. And then on the other side of that is it's harder to do this when you don't have the volunteers in the building. You know, it's so hard to keep people engaged when they're recording from home. So it's become a habit of mine that when they send me their files, whether it's via email or whatever, I just shoot them a quick, hey, I got your file, thanks again. That's it. It doesn't have to be anything crazy, you know?
Right.
I just want people to, A, be engaged. I want them to feel like they've been contacted. Because if you send somebody with an assignment out into the ether and then you never talk to them again, there's a solid chance you'll get a month into that and then that volunteer will disappear and you will never hear from them again. Which happened a lot during the pandemic. And you know, just keeping people engaged and making sure that you're contacting them regularly is so important.
Yeah.
With remote volunteers. Make them feel like they're part of the team even though they're not in your building.
One thing I did, we were all remote, we kept in contact with them weekly because of, we thanked them every time, but it was so unique and kind of cool that we kind of didn't have to worry about recognition. But, I mean, we did, but we didn't. But now we have some people, most of the volunteers are back, but we still have about a dozen who are remote. And one of the things that I did, and also with recognition, we have a bulletin board, and we have all the birthdays of the month up. And our volunteers, I'm sure like yours, are very active in our community. And if they've written a letter to the editor, we put that up. If there's an article about them, we put that in the bulletin board. And we welcome new volunteers. If I find out, you know, that they're a grandma or they used to be a teacher, we put a little poster up and welcome them on that bulletin board. And so, our one time, I'm going to probably do this again because it's been like a year since I've done it. But I took pictures of all the things that they would see if they came in, like that bulletin board and the quote
of the listener and a bunch of candy, and I mailed that out to them. And so this is, you know, so that what they really, the remote people loved that. This is what you'd see if you were here or something, or I don't know, but that was a neat one.
Becca over here, we do a volunteer spotlight every month that goes out in our e-newsletter, and in conjunction with that, then we also do a 15-minute on-air volunteer interview. So it's interesting because we have had some of our volunteers straight up refuse. They're like, no, I don't want to be recognized. And Ryan's really good at like cajoling them into it. But that's really nice, and it also is good for that e-newsletter content as well, and that gets the word out. But that's always fun. So then we also learn more about them.
Do you guys also send birthday cards? That's a good thing to do.
Electronically, automated.
Okay.
We do the volunteer of the month, and we do the listener of the month, too. We always ask them who their favorite readers are. So that's, the readers appreciate that. We also have, I tried a private Facebook group for our volunteers to try to keep them engaged, and for a while it was pretty active, and people were sending pictures of their home studio setup and that kind of thing. It seems to have died down a little bit, but for the people that are on Facebook, some of them like that. We also periodically will have one of our voice acting professionals do a kind of professional audit of the volunteers' recordings with a lot of feedback about, very detailed professional sort of feedback about their every single quality, pace, pitch, everything. And they appreciate, they're always dying for more feedback, so I'm always looking for ways to get that for them.
We had. Are you keeping track of that? Who's raising their hand? Are you doing that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, because I'm not. I guess that's what your job is right now. Yes, ma'am.
This is Allison from Audio Reader Inc. Kansas. We had weekly Zoom calls during the pandemic to try and keep people engaged, which we stopped about a year ago because that was getting really hard and low attendance, and we've switched it to monthly, and we've transformed it into more of a training. So we have someone from one of our partner organizations, we had an ASL translator speak, so just more informative. I definitely think of my volunteers kind of like the five love languages, if you're familiar with that. So just a potpourri of things for my introverts who really don't want me to say hello to them, to the people, you know, we have a lunch bunch four times a year where people can go out to lunch with staff. And so, yeah, like everybody's doing here, a variety of things.
One thing I did a few months ago, and because with all this swag stuff, I had like a zillion things. And so I bought paper bags, and I made a poster that says, "It's no surprise we appreciate you," and then I had surprise package bags, so I just dumped a swag thing in a bag, and then here's your surprise, and it was just this really fun thing when they opened it and found a screwdriver, and I need a screwdriver, so that was a fun one. Yes?
Every month we've been doing what we call a sip and chat, and it's like noontime on a Wednesday, and it's just for volunteers to get together. And it's not just our volunteers at Sun Sounds, it's volunteers at our two public radio stations. And it's just a chance to sit around and chitty chat about, like, okay, you know, what are you binge watching? What books are you reading? What, you know, what's going on with you? And then we do a newsletter every month. We call them on their birthdays. And we're also doing workshops for volunteers who are just recording Audacity workshops. So they can come and join in on that. And we're also doing a guide to good practice, like what makes a good show. And we're doing that workshop for kind of our veteran volunteers. And then we did another workshop for all the volunteers to kind of update them on what was going on, because we were kind of tired of people saying, hey, when are we opening up? And we had no answers.
Right.
So we did this overview, and we brought everyone up to speed about what Sun Sounds was doing, how we're broadcasting, how we're related to the college, because a lot of volunteers didn't know, and they were calling me and yelling at me about the fact that I wouldn't let them come back in.
Yeah.
So I was getting tired of getting those little nasty notes. And some of them, they just didn't understand the hierarchy.
Right, yeah, so, because some don't even realize, I mean, they do and they don't realize we're actually part of the library because it's a whole separate building and all that, so yeah.
But when we did that, we said, hey, do you know we have this workshop? Do you know that you're getting this newsletter every month? Do you know that we're doing all this stuff? And if you don't, start opening up the your newsletter. Start coming to these workshops, because this is why we're doing it, to kind of engage you. So it's been working okay.
Thank you. I'm going to do one more, and then I'm going to turn it over to Mike.
It's not so much keeping, but drawing people back. And one thing I do with the newsletter, Laura does these really great volunteer spotlights where she'll interview and then transcribe and have just a really nice, just a casual conversation with a volunteer over a cup of coffee, and you get to know it. And we've even had, like, the grandchildren, and we put those on our blog, on our website, like the grandchildren, family members of those volunteers, like, commenting on those blogs, and those get a lot of click rates and open rates and traction. And sharing on socials, too. But one thing we keep just about everybody on our, unless they've explicitly, like, I've moved, they're not, they're on the volunteer list, and so in the last several months, I've had people come back out of the woodwork, because every time I'm like, hey, you know, hi, volunteer name, you know, insert their name. And I was like, thank you so much for your hard work. We're doing, you know, we've been really busy and everything. And so they see those things. They're like, oh, well, I've been, you know, I haven't been around. And I think it's not like a guilt trip, but I think people definitely, but it is a little bit of a guilt trip. Like, thank you so much for your hard work. But it's really been, every time I put that line in there, it's really helped draw people back. And I didn't even tell Tom, we've got one of our old Honor Society students wants to come back.
Ooh.
Carter Staley.
Tell me what is the line again, because I was...
It's just that, you know, like, we can't do what we do without you. Thank you so much. Just listen, thank you for your hard work, though. It's the hard work, the words that, when they're not, it's, but it does help. And there was something else in my mind, but that was...
Okay. Well, thank you so much for all of your brain. I'm going to, again, type these up and get them out to you so that you can have it with you at your various offices. So thank you, and I'm going to turn it over to Mike.
I'm Michael from the Recording Library of West Texas in Midlands. I'm 5'8", my wife says 5'7½". I argue, but she's an attorney, so you can see where that goes. I'm wearing blue jeans, a dark navy blue shirt with long sleeves, and tennis shoes. So I'm gonna talk about a little bit, first, when I introduced myself last time, I mentioned that I like the geeky software stuff. I'm not a computer guy, I'm not an IT guy, I'm an audio guy. So that's kind of what I love. And just real quick about my background, I started in radio when I was 16 in 1985. And so I saw it go from analog to digital. And some people were a little uncomfortable when that was going on. I was like, with every new thing, I was like, bring it, I'm here for it, and it's making it easier. I don't ever want to have to splice tape again. So that was good. And so I've learned a lot, but it's all been from other people that have taught me. And a lot of people in this room have taught me things as well. So I'll try and like throw some things out there that I have learned. And I'm going to kind of go in two parts. One, the volunteer part, and then one, the post-production part. So we'll do that. And I want to do this kind of what we were doing earlier, and a lot of audience participation, if we could, because we all learn from each other. Who has brought volunteers back into their studios? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, a good many. Who's doing like a hybrid approach? Some from home, some from, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay, and then who is only remote reading? 1, 2, 3, okay, all right. Okay, good, Tom's back.
I'm sorry, I had to use the restroom.
What did I tell you yesterday?
I had 30 seconds to pee, bro.
I was going to have to go into my duck walks into a bar routine. Yeah, no one wants to hear that. Okay, so, of course, whether they're doing it remotely, whether they're doing it in the studio, what our goal is, we want a good end product. And I know that some of us, we vary our standards just a little bit because I know that I've had to be less critical for nitpicky little things, especially for home readers. Otherwise, I would just drive myself crazy and I would have to do therapy 2 times a week. So I've kind of let things go. So if it's like a thing where it's like a habitual thing, like there's a dog barking every time they're reading, then it's like, I go to the volunteer coordinator and say, you know, can you talk with this person? But if it's like in a newspaper, random article, one dog bark, whatever, it's fine. I have 4 cats, and there have been times when I've been narrating, and a cat has meowed, and I've actually just said, you know, I apologize, that was my cat, and then keep going, because I'm thinking of that person who may be in an assisted living facility who's using us as a companion, and they hear that, and they're getting the information, and then they hear that little bit of just a fun little quick whatever, and they realize, oh, this is a human being, and it's not a robot that's reading to me. So, are you guys who have remote volunteers, are you supplying your volunteers with the equipment or having them read all from their phones?
Yes.
Yeah, I think half and half. We bought some microphones and we'll give them to people, but we also have people that are reading on their iPhone and they're just using the speaker on the iPhone.
Okay.
Or they have some weird equipment, you know, that they're using themselves. So, yeah, we've had that. If somebody says, I want to read, but I don't have a microphone, we'll give it to them. We also tell them what to buy, but a lot of people are just using random.
Becca here. We didn't worry about it too much for the great brunt of 18 months. We let folks, you know, if they could do it on their phone, if they could do it on, we had silver digital recorders that we gave folks. And then we focused most of 2021, June on getting folks back in the studio. And then in early 2022, then Ryan went through and he kind of just pointed out the folks that he knew needed to be recording on something better. And so then we just swapped out whether it was digital recorders or had, we're still having one-on-one conversations with some folks that have stayed home, whether they need a mic, which we supply, we're just using USB mics, or if perhaps they need a slight change of location because there are too many interruptions, you know, that sort of thing. So, but we're just now still navigating that.
So in Cincinnati, we had everybody use what worked best for them, and I learned multiple ways of receiving recordings from MailDrop, WeTransfer, Dropbox attachments. And one thing we ask even new volunteers who want to record explicitly from home is to send test recordings so that we can kind of get an idea of what their environment is. And for those that have background noise, be it an air conditioner in their house or even the recorder just generates noise, like a onboard microphone on a laptop, I'll ask for them to start every recording with a 10-second dead space so that I can generate a noise profile and filter out the background noise if it's consistent. If it's random noises of like a dog barking or someone crashing or telephone ring, hopefully volunteer, if it's incidental things, hopefully they'll stop and reread a section if they're aware of it. Not everyone does that, and you just try to work around it. But that's, in a nutshell,
how Cincinnati's been handling the recording from home ordeal.
I'll jump quick.
We are live readers of the Des Moines Register in the office in Des Moines, but we do 11 newspapers. All the rest are read either by home readers reading on whatever device. We tried buying microphones in the beginning. We talked about ordering computers in the beginning, but does anyone remember how you couldn't buy a computer in the beginning? Because they were all gone, because everyone was buying computers to work from home. We didn't know really what mic would work with everyone's stuff, and the ones that we got on Amazon that we thought would be good turned out to be not, and it was too hard for people to understand. So the way we are, our hybrid mode, which is the most exhausting part of IRIS right now, a person has to do an audition. First we have them test that they can make it to Dropbox with, by sending us a 20-second test file. Everybody has the same login on Dropbox, which I know Lewis Calloway would have a stroke if he heard that. But we have a folder for each paper. You record on your phone or whatever. You send it to the correct folder on the Dropbox. When you have started the upload, you send us an email. And then when we see it and safely receive it, we reply back to you, because it's the least we can do. Because that person who generally doesn't work with Dropbox every single day, or computers in general, they're waiting, and we want them to get on with their day. And we say, thank you, we got it, or, ooh, I'm not seeing it. So we have communication both ways, like Tom was saying. We are completely not cyber secure, because we have the same login for all of our Dropbox stuff. And then when we get the file, we download it, and then we clean it up. Personally, I had two cats in heat throughout the summer of that pandemic. And I apologize, and I apologize, and apologize, and finally I'm like, oh, forget it, you know what that sound is. And they only yowled when I started recording. I have a little house with no doors. It's all open. And so anyway, the cats and heat is still a thing for some of our listeners. They ask how the cats are, they're fine. but we are still in this habsy-habsy mode. And it's painful, but we get the file, we clean it up a little bit, we put music on the front and back, and then put it into our animation. But it's still a ton of work.
Yeah, there's definitely more post-production work with remote.
Yeah, and having a good noise reduction software really helps.
Like what?
Wait.
Well, why don't you wait? No. I'll give you guys some examples of what I use this afternoon at 12:45 when Tom is hosting the free stuff conference thing. What I was going to say earlier is that I think what we don't realize is that the iPhone has kind of revolutionized a lot of things, and part of that is that the quality of the microphones and those little guys is pretty good considering how small they are. And also, for some volunteers, navigating a computer recorder and a computer for reading at the same time is a massive pain in the ass. Having to click back and forth between windows to stop between articles. You forget to click into the window where you're reading from and you start scrolling, and all of a sudden you're zooming in on something on your recorder. It can be a real problem for some of them. So having two separate devices in front of them, one for reading, one for recording, just like we do in the office, is almost essential for a lot of folks. It simplifies the process. And I think that while we're all kind of integrated into Dropbox because it's just what a lot of us have used, being on as many file sharing platforms as you can be on makes it that much easier for your volunteer. If you can have a solid Google Drive that's organized, if you can have a nice organized Dropbox, if you can receive iCloud, it's gonna help you make their job easier. And yes, I do get a lot of files that are just sent straight to my email that I have to then download and then edit, but I would rather do that if the person on the other end has had so much trouble getting Dropbox to work, or they're just not a Google person. If you use the Mail app on your phone, you get an iCloud. What it does is if the file is too big, your phone and Apple will convert it to an iCloud link, and then it will attach that link to the bottom of the email, and you just have to click on that to get it. And that seems to be my simplest solution for iPhone users. Now, Android users have a whole other ocean to swim in,
because their recorders are all different on every single one of their phones. They're all named different. They all look different. It's just skins, but it's just hard for them to, it's hard to find uniform there than it is on an iPhone.
I don't think many Android devices have recorders even to begin with.
No, they do. They do. It's called, maybe called voice recordings. They're all different. I will tell you, if you have a Samsung phone, it's like Samsung recorder. If you have an LG phone, it's, you know, a completely different name. And what they are, they're the exact same app, but they all have a different skin on them for each manufacturer. And it can be confusing for the, you know, to try to train folks when you have, you know, three different versions of the same program and the buttons are in different spots. So, you know, if I can get folks that with Apple devices, it makes my life a lot easier.
When you record on the Apple device, does it save it as an M4A or MP3?
It saves it as an M4A.
So you have to have a converter.
Right? Well, you have to have a program that can read them, yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that later on when Tom is hosting the free stuff seminar.
This is Kim from Audio Information Network of Colorado. We initially had folks using all different kinds of things, and phones and computers and all sort of tablets, all sorts of things. And now I think we have everybody using a computer and not using a phone. We tried little pop mics and realized that they didn't work very well. But we don't buy equipment for listeners, but we do provide information on, you know, recommended mics and those types of things. We have everybody now using Audacity, because it was just impossible for us to be able to help people troubleshoot when people were using all sorts of different programs. So we ask everyone to use Audacity. It's free for them. They don't have to pay for it. And then we actually now have a portal, a volunteer portal, so people can go to our website, and they each have their own login. And this is partly because our tech company was really freaked out that people were FTPing into our system and it wasn't secure. So people, they can now go to our website, log in as a volunteer, and upload their file. They can listen to it, make sure it's good, all those sorts of things. And we do have an audition process. That's just partly to help us so we know, can these folks actually do this? Sometimes we have people that want to read, but they're computer challenged, and that's a problem now with remote readers. So they do go through that process and do an audition. We're checking reading. After Allison typed last year about her process, so we now have it automated. So it, once they send their application, they automatically get the audition sent to them. We've just tried to make a real process so everybody is following a consistent process and consistent. Do you have anything to add, Evan? You actually work with it all.
Yeah, so our volunteer coordinator trains those who are unfamiliar with the Audacity software to, you know, how to use it. And we have all of our volunteers submit their file MP3, 192 kilobit per second bit rate, which is nice because it's compressed, and all they have to do is record it and upload it, and it will track who logged in, when they uploaded their file, how long it is, which is nice, and so we can track all of that beautiful data and put it into lovely spreadsheets. And of course, yes, we did try the pop mics, and ironically, the pop mics actually caused more popping than they should have. And so since that didn't work out, we do have, I believe, a list of like different mic types, and of course we have microphones that you should not use. We do not we cannot let people use their, for instance, their built-in laptop microphones, as they tend to pick up a lot of the room noise and reverberance around them, and we really try and eliminate all of that because it doesn't sound particularly good on broadcast or podcast. And so as far as our audition process is concerned, yes, they get this, you know, they get this whole audition to read. It's usually two articles and a list of words, and we judge them based, well, I listen to the audition usually first and listen to how they read, you know, if they're doing this thing where they're like brushing themselves and reading a bit too quickly, or if they're saying a lot, or making rustling noises. And then, of course, I judge whether they're using a laptop mic or a headset mic, or we have had one or two auditions where people have used their smartphone, which, yeah, nope, don't do that. So, and then if one or two volunteers has particularly bad audio normally, I will try and just do a quick fix on that, usually in the form of noise reduction. And that's just Audacity's noise reduction, where you select some silence, it gives you a noise profile, and then you just do the noise reduction that way. I mean, that's pretty much it as far as...
Mike?
This is your chance to promote the other session one more time. Did Audacity stop updating? That there was something a while back about they weren't going to do something anymore.
They're updating regularly.
They're updating, okay. Yeah. There was something about the maybe it was some of the accessibility stuff they weren't going to do. But anyway, so that was one thing. The noise problems on the laptops or even on a desktop computer with a microphone plugged into the microphone input on the computer itself, a lot of the noise comes from using the computer's built-in sound card. So what you really want is something that puts the microphone audio on its own sound card. And most of the USB mics do that. Some of them do it better than others, as you said, but that's why they sound better.
Thank you.
I have to say this is Allison from Audio Reader, for every volunteer that were having trouble with their sound recording, we did an advanced Audacity training that showed people how to edit, how to insert, fade their own music. We have as many volunteers that are producing really fun, amazing, perfectly clean files that I have to do absolutely nothing to. So like our TV guide, I'm not asking about copyright, but he plays a TV theme at the beginning,
oh,
and
God.
There's a quiz, and yeah, shh.
Oh, this is recording. Sorry.
Mary Frances, will you let me know about time? How are we on time?
Let's go 7 minutes.
Okay.
I should only take about 6.5.
I want to come over here and give this to my ED, because we did something really cool in so far as the training with our volunteers.
Hi, Bailey.
Hey.
Morning.
This is Bailey with the Recording Library of West Texas. So I think it's really important for new volunteers who's never even walked into your organization or heard about an organization to know what to expect. So, because it can be extremely intimidating whenever they get into a booth or start to record. So we hired a little part-time college guy in the middle of the pandemic to make us training YouTube videos. So we have that on a private section of our YouTube channel where we send them the link, and it's required that is step one, you have to watch these videos. So the first one is actually an example reading, and it's one of our volunteers who's been with us for a long time. We asked her I made a script, and she read, she did an example of a really good reading. And then it's kind of fun because she did examples of really bad readings. And so we intentionally put in dogs barking in the background, squeaking of the chair, hitting your jewelry on the table. And we said, you know, you want to watch for things like this. And I think that really set our volunteers up to know what to expect. And then we also had them actually do a screen recording from their iPhone, because we did a survey and I think it's like 80% of our volunteers did Apple. So we had him actually record the process of using Voice Recorder or whatever app, and then the process of sending it to Dropbox. So they have like the record option on phones. So he did a screen recording of that. So that was also very helpful for our volunteers who maybe are not tech savvy, which is a lot of them. So yeah, you might consider doing some training videos on a YouTube channel for them to watch.
By the way, is everybody recording in mono?
Yes.
Recording or airing?
Airing.
Airing.
Okay. Recording.
Recording.
Art.
Some volunteers.
Some. We've got a wonderful, wonderful, generous gentleman on Saturdays who sends. He sends the Sioux City Journal in 4 pieces, and it's full stereo, and you can hear that file coming down the interstate. It takes it like an hour and a half to get here, and then we have to get not so gigantic, but there are places where there are lines for our volunteers who, my view of it is, we demanded these people figure out how to record on their iPhone Dale Finnegan when things went bad, and they did. I will say volunteer Dale Finnegan came up with the method, the paper towel method. If you have to read on your iPhone, you place a roll of paper towels vertically. People are writing it down, dude. But anyway, we invited and demanded these people to get out of their comfort zone and learn something totally new quickly to keep our butts on the air, and now tweaking it, I feel, would be offensive to them. So I just gracefully say thank you for that 840 gig file, and I'll make it mono.
Real quick, while we've had volunteers using their phones to record, we've actually gotten the quality to become quite a bit better by recommending microphones to plug into it. And I know you guys have mentioned a couple of little pop ones, but what we've done is actually gotten full USB condenser mics for $30, $40, and then just a cheap adapter to plug into the bottom of the iPhone, and it works remarkably well. It sounds just as good as if you're plugging it into the back of a computer with USB.
Yeah, and I agree with Mary Frances about, and you weren't here during this part of my award-winning presentation, but no, I was just saying, some things that before, it would be like, ugh, it's kind of like a dog bark, let it go, whatever.
God bless you.
Just to save the sanity, nothing else. When I came to my first conference in Cincinnati, Lori and Andrea and a man named Art Hadley, who some of you know, who's now retired from Audio Reader, kind of really, I felt like, took me under their wings and kind of helped show me the ropes because I was so new to all of this. And Art had taught me two things that I remembered. He taught me all about bit rates and all kinds of stuff. But one was the recorded mono, and then the other was, are you going to talk about, Tom, Levelator in your... Okay, spoiler alert. I'll let him talk about it. It's a piece of software called the Levelator, and that's all I'll say.
Right, everybody's going to skip my presentation.
No, I don't want to mess you up.
No, you're good. You can mention it, correct.
It's a great program, and I'm going to let Tom talk about it later.
Along the lines of stepping on your presentation, will you be discussing download problems, like problems with downloading? Because I had a question I want to ask about that now.
Yeah, ask that now.
Okay. Who here has had problems receiving recordings because the person sending the recording had an upload problem of some sort? And what have you done to remedy those situations?
Make them turn their computer back on. Oftentimes they throw the file in Dropbox, close the laptop, and walk away before it has a chance to upload.
Or okay. His phone as well.
Yeah.
They have to wait a good time.
There's where the Monaro file can make a big difference because it's half the size of the stereo file. So that makes a big difference if they can do mono. But my big issue with Dropbox is I put something on Dropbox and then I delete it. It takes it off of your machine. And there's supposed to be a setting in Dropbox that'll fix that, but I haven't found it.
As a follow-up to that, another question is, what about the person's internet connectivity? Have you found that certain people's networks are subpar, if you will, and cause low upload speeds?
You bet.
Low upload speeds are
common. Welcome to Iowa.
I get better upload speeds at home than I do at my office.
Him in the back and back.
Hey, just really quickly, I can't tell you the amount of times I've had to troubleshoot people with uploading issues, and it's uploading issues in Dropbox, and it's uploading issues in WeTransfer, and it's uploading, and oftentimes it's really the simple things. It's like, okay, fine, like let's identify where your file is at. Is it somewhere else other than that? Great, let's shut everything off. People not updating their Dropbox, that's a huge thing. All of a sudden, when I get 6 calls in 4 days, I know that means there's a bunch of people with a Dropbox update waiting. Ask them to update, the uploads go smoother. We did have some folks with massive connectivity issues. They just didn't get to be remote readers again. You know, and that's a hard thing to say, but we couldn't we had to ask that they wait until we were ready to
dial up, just don't cut the bus.
Live again.
This is Kim from AINC. Yeah, Anthony, we've had that same problem, and we've even had folks that had no problem, and then all of a sudden there was a major problem, and they're like, they think it's us, and we've checked our systems, and we think it's their internet. We had one person that she was reading an hour-long program, and there was just no way her internet couldn't handle that, so we had to switch her to a half-hour program, and then it was fine. So we've tried to do things like that where we can, so we don't lose a reader, and she has been a reader for years and years, so we don't lose a reader because they have problems uploading.
I also remember last year, you folks here maybe to receive the email, because I remember sending it out, where Apple had a problem where MailDrop failed, and nobody could use MailDrop for about a week and a half. And all of a sudden, I was getting all these emails that were MailDropped once Apple fixed the problem. I don't know if anybody remembers that.
Are we about hitting time?
Yeah, Andrea, and then...
Oh, okay.
No, I was just going to say that at SunSounds, we have everyone just dump their show onto our website. We have they log in as a volunteer. Yeah, we all have the same login. So glad Lewis isn't
right
for that. But we use, it's ancient, I know, FileZilla, but they just put it on our website. So no one uses Dropbox, no one uses any other method. That's the only way that we will receive shows. Occasionally, someone will email us a show as backup, but it's just kind of a one and done. And we give specific directions on how to get it done.
We do have one thing we've run into. Okay, with the Dropbox thing, I don't know if you already discussed it in and out of the room, but I insist that our volunteers do not use the Dropbox that's on their desktop or the app that they've downloaded to their computer. Never, never, never. And the reason is Dropbox has multiple ways to sync your stuff to your Dropbox stuff, to your other stuff. One of our board members accidentally uploaded her entire business to Dropbox, which then a client in a shared folder in Dropbox deleted. So, and guess who we called to go un-F that? Lewis Calloway. She paid him $1,000 to go get her business back. But anyway, when we have that sync thing on, whether I can monitor it at the station, I can't monitor it at your home, but number one, you can lose the file. Number two, people's personal information is getting synced to my folder when those automatic syncs happen with Dropbox. It's one thing if it's your vacation pictures. It's another thing when it's the medical information that you are taking picture of and sending to your doctor, and I do not want that on Ira's property. So we had lots of problems with that. So I insist that our volunteers, even if they're heavy Dropbox users on a personal basis, only go through the browser, log into Dropbox, and put it that way, because we were getting all, I had to send an email to our volunteer group that said, is this your dog's butt? Because someone had uploaded, and I can't see who it is, but someone had uploaded close-ups of their dog's behind, the dog had a situation, and they had sent those photos to the vet. Sky, didn't I?
I don't remember that.
Okay. But so anyway, with us, never, 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 we tell our volunteers, never use the Dropbox that's on the app you've downloaded. Only go through us, because we can't be responsible for that personal information. And we've seen some weird pictures.
Are you, now when you do that, are you having them log into your Dropbox? Is that what you said?
Yep.
So when you do that, you can have two separate Dropbox accounts logged in at the same time.
Have you met me?
I know. What I'm saying is that the app can have your personal Dropbox and the web browser can have the Iris Dropbox, so the two will be completely separate.
Why don't you stop by my office and just fix it?
Well, because you don't pay me.
Oh, okay. No, that's too complicated for even me. So trying to explain that to volunteers too, I'm just like, just don't. Just always go through the browser, because, yeah.
Okay, last question. I'm just being mindful of time.
You are awesome.
Well, this isn't a question, but our portal is nowhere near perfect, and it has gone down in the past. So Dropbox is, of course, our backup method. And, of course, if we see that the portal is down, we will call the volunteers that have to upload their audio within the next couple of hours and tell them to do so. But our portal does not let you upload. Like, you know, if you wanted to, you cannot upload, you know, your Iowa State Capitol selfies to our portal. It will not let you. You can only upload specifically MP3 files, so we have file restrictions, basically.
Very quickly, I just wanted to mention that this goes back to more the first part of the session with George Ann, but Bailey reminded me with volunteers. I sometimes send our better volunteers copy for PSAs and promos, and I'll just say, I'll phrase it as, can you do me a favor? You sound so good, and I'm tired of hearing my own voice on the radio station. Would you mind reading this PSA for me? You know, and it gives them a little bit of a pat on the back. And again, it gives it another voice other than me on the station. So, anyway, Tom, when did I lose control?
You were great.
No, it's okay. Thank y'all very much.
Thank you, Michael.
And then lunch. Yay! Yay, lunch.